Blog Talk Radio. And welcome to Inside Scoop Live. I'm your host, Sherry Hoyt. Today I'm speaking with Geza Tetralier, author of 10 published books in the genres of thrillers, memoirs, poetry, and children's books. Born in Budapest, Hungary, Geza escaped with his family in 1956 during the Hungarian Revolution, immigrating to Canada the same year. He grew up in Toronto, attending the University of Toronto Schools, where he was school captain, and graduated from Harvard University with a BA in Human Ecology. Geza was selected as a Rhodes Scholar from Ontario, attending Oxford University and graduating with a BA and MA in Human Sciences. He completed his studies with an MSc in Economics from the London School of Economics and Politics. Geza also represented Canada as an épée fencer in the 1976 Olympic Games in Montreal. Geza's professional experience has included stints in government, international organizations, finance, and environmental entrepreneurship. Since 2004, he has been semi-retired, managing a few investments, mainly in the clean energy sector, and devoting himself to his family and his writing. Geza is a citizen of Canada and Hungary, and currently divides his time between Vermont and San Francisco. To learn more about Geza Tetralier and his books, visit his website at gezatetralier.com. Hi, Geza. Welcome to Inside Scoop Live.
Hello, Sherry. Thank you for interviewing me. I really appreciate it.
Well, let's start with a bit of background information. When did you start writing, and what was your inspiration?
Oh, I started writing way back in high school, actually, even before in grade school. I first started writing poetry in Hungarian, and then I translated some of that, and I decided maybe it would be better to start writing poetry in English, so I did that. Then I translated some short stories for an author who wrote in Hungarian to English. And then I fell in love with writing, and I wrote the first real big piece that I wrote was my memoir for the children about my family's escape from Hungary. And I wrote this in my 20s, originally just for my children and my family to have. And then I showed it to a few people, and they said, well, why don't you try and get this published? So eventually, once I retired from my career in international finance, I started going back on some of the things I'd done, and it was one of the things I put out for publishing, and the publisher picked it up in 2015, and it got published. But along the way, I also really got interested in the creative process and creating fiction, and so
yeah.
I delved into writing thrillers when I was living in Vienna. That's when I started writing thrillers about some of the issues to do with between the East and the West, the former communist world, which has really influenced me, obviously, given my background. That's how I started writing. So that's really how I got into writing. It's initially poetry, which I still love and I still do. It's my third poetry collection is now coming out, and it's one of my passions, but I also love writing fiction.
Now, you have 10 published books, along with a couple of recently released or about to be released titles, and so 2019 has been busy for you so far. I want to know how you write so fast.
Well, I just sit down, and it just pours out. Once I focus on writing, then... And in front of my laptop, it just pours out, and the story creates itself in many ways. And once I introduce a character, then that character also helps to shape the story. So I don't know. I just love the whole process. Actually, many of the things that have recently been published over the last 2 years are books that I wrote, works that I wrote some time ago. Although The Rainbow Vintner, I guess, dates back to when, which is my latest novel, my latest thriller, dates back to when we were living in Bordeaux, which was between 2011 and 2015. So that's when I wrote it, I guess, towards the end of that period.
Oh, okay.
Also, the lead time with publishers, I find, is quite long. You submit something, and it takes at least a year for them to get their work. Obviously, it varies from publisher to publisher.
Right. So you said The Rainbow Vintner was just released in February. What is that about?
That's about terrorist attack and a far-right-wing political coup in modern-day France. It was written when as I said, when I was living in France, and the Hollande government was faced with quite a few jihadist terrorist bombings. And at the same time, there was a rising, very far-right political movement, and I tried to conceptualize all that into a thriller, and I think it works. I bring a lot of our life in Bordeaux at the time into the book, so it's a fun book.
Yeah, and what kind of response have you received so far?
It's good. It's very, very new on the market, so it's hard to tell yet. But it's I've gotten 5-star reviews all around, so
wonderful.
Good. I hope it sells. The second book that is just coming out, actually, it's coming out in the next week or so, is The Fencers, and it's a memoir about the my fencing career, first of all, and then when I was at the 1976 Olympics in Montreal representing Canada, I was approached by Romanian-Hungarian friend, fencer I had befriended on the international circuit, mm-hmm. to help defect to Canada. And so that's that story, and it's quite a nice story of courage on the part of the fencer friend of Paul Subbel, and how he stays in Canada and makes a life for himself there.
I want to hear more about you being in the Olympics. Tell us what that was like.
I just made it to the Olympics, but I didn't do well there. So, no. It was wonderful to be there representing my country and walking into the stadium, the Olympic Stadium, at the opening ceremony. It was one of the highs of my life, and then fencing in the Olympics, but I didn't do well. I peaked earlier for the national championships.
So now in April, you're releasing your latest poetry collection, and this is called Extinction. What is the focus of this collection?
It's really, it addresses my concern about what we're doing to the world around us, to other forms of life around us, and to ourselves in terms of climate change, pollution, and all of the attendant ills of social disruption and conflict. So it's poems that I've written over the last 2 years, mainly focusing on those kinds of topics. Some of the poems are lighter in nature, others are quite introspective, and the poetry collection is divided into three parts: the world, then other species, which is what we're doing to other species and ourselves, and then personal extinction, so a number of introspective poems about death and morbidity. So some of it is quite heavy, but some of it is lighter. So I'm really pleased that PRA Publishing has chosen to bring it out. They brought out my other two volumes, Cellos, Tears, and Sighs and Murmurs, so I'm very pleased that they're publishing now my third one. That'll be out in April, Poetry Month, and as I found out, also Earth Month, so it's double whammy.
Oh, yeah, nice. You write in so many different genres. What is it like? Do you find it hard to switch gears, and do you have a favorite?
Well, I have two favorites. Poetry I love. I just love painting a picture or trying to capture an emotion with words and trying to do it as touristy as possible. Hence my love of haiku. When I lived in Japan, I really started experimenting with haiku, and I just love that form. But poetry in general, just trying to capture a feeling or theme in words. Partly why I love it is because it's fairly easy to do. Some of my poems come to me during the night. I write them down, and then in the morning I polish them and shape them, and then they're there. Whereas a work of fiction, it's much longer to create a story, and the story evolves over time. And I also love that process of working with characters I create, and they take a life on a life of their own, and they shape the story. So it's a fascinating process to me how the mind creates these worlds and then captures them in words. So I love fiction, and I love writing thrillers and poetry. Those are my two favorites. And also memoirs. I just simply had to. I felt I had to capture these three events in my life, which were so momentous in shaping me.
Yeah, absolutely. Pretty significant events. So I would imagine it would be more daunting to write a memoir. I would worry about, you know, getting everything just right, especially two that you've done have been for helping other people, and so it's getting their story right.
My view is that memoir, at the end of the day, obviously has to be subjective, so it's your take on the story. And yes, certainly, in The Fencers, the book that's coming out now in March, I talked in depth to Paul Subbo, the fencer, whom I helped effect, and got his version of it. And I incorporated. But at the end of the day, it's my take on the story. And also, obviously because it's subjective, other people may not agree with it. That's how the facts played out. So in my first memoir, story of my family's escape, because it was some time ago, quite a while ago, before I wrote it down, the memory shapes the events to a certain extent. So when I showed it to my brother, who lived through the same events, he had some differences as to how things happened. But it's my memoir, so that's the way the story.
That's right. Oh, I know. I love that about the mind. It's so fascinating. It's like, did that really happen, or was that just, did I make that up? You know.
That's partly why I love writing, is because exploring my own mind, that whole process is thrilling to me.
Yeah. Now, you've also written a children's storybook, The Waffle and the Pancake.
Right.
And that is such a different avenue from what you normally write. So I'm curious, what called you to write a children's book?
When I was younger and had two young children who are now grown and have their own children, I made up these stories for them. And then actually two of them I wrote down, and with a view to having my daughter illustrate them when she was young, and she drew a few pictures. And so the stories are written down, and I rediscovered them just last year or a couple of years ago, and thought, maybe these are worth looking at for publishing. So I told them to my grandchildren, and they were fascinated. And so I polished one of them, The Waffle and the Pancake, and found a publisher who was interested in publishing it. And then we found an illustrator, and it got published. The other story, which is still waiting to be published, I think it's also a fun story. It's more of a Christmas story, but it's a bit longer than children's storybooks now are. I find with today's children's storybooks, a lot of them are quite formalized, and the structure, you know, it's not supposed to be more than 800 words. A lot of it is very anodyne, C-spot run. My stories are more like Grimm's fairy tales and Hans Christian Andersen tales, which have a lot of spooky events going on in them, which is what I grew up on. So those are the kinds of children's stories I like to tell.
Yeah, I like that. Not so formatted, like you said. Yeah. So what do your grandchildren think about that?
Oh, they love it. And they had me go read the Waffle and the Pancake to their classes, and the children loved it. I left copies of the book at the school. So.
Oh, how fun.
Yeah, it's fun.
So many of your thrillers and memoirs present Russia as the evil empire. And tell us about what you discovered during your research process about Putin's Russia.
One of the things I am fascinated by is the extent to which Putin's Russia still is very, very similar in many ways to Stalinist Russia, and the corruption and the sort of lack of attention to important issues like human life and the environment is just not there. Putin is the world's richest man, and everything he does is really to aggrandize his wealth and the wealth of those around him. If you play ball with him, you get wealthy. The Sochi Olympics, in the original budget was $6 billion equivalent in rubles. The cost escalation brought it up to $12 billion, and by the time it was finished, it was $60 billion that cost. So 10 times. And it was basically to line the pockets of Putin and his cronies.
That's unbelievable.
Society. And one of the things I also did research on is the extent to which the structure around Putin and the government is complicit in things like arms trading and human trafficking. You know, as long as they get their take, they look the other way and allow it to happen. And some of the arms trafficking is actually arms that are stolen from the Russian army by the officers and filtered through to their cronies in the arms trading gangs, the merchants of evil, as I call them, who often trade drugs and human beings. And this is one of the things I explore in Twisted Traffic, the second book in the Twisted Trilogy, is how this all plays together. So that's sort of my take on that part of the world, and I try to work a lot of that into my novels and explore these issues.
You also reflect in many of your works climate change and global environmental issues, and so I know those things are near to your heart or that you have a passion about. What's going on? Well, what can we do as a global society?
Well, we, in some senses, we should have been doing a lot more earlier on. And actually, I first became an environmentalist in quotes when I was a student, and I studied under Roger Revelle, who was one of the first people who brought focus onto the issue of climate change and global warming, and that it is going to be the central issue for mankind over the next 50 to 100 years. And he's been proven correct. Certainly the political establishment worldwide needs to pay attention, much more attention to it, and listen to what the scientists are telling and impose legislation and rules that are consistent with sustainability and taking care of our environment and other species. And we're not doing enough. We're not doing that. There's too much corporate short-term interest that takes precedence over the long-term interests of the world around us. That is the crux of the problem, and much more needs to be done at the political level. And at the individual level, one can do one's bit.
Do you think an individual can actually make a difference?
Well, I think one can, but 1,000 can, and 1,000,000 certainly can.
Yeah.
So, you know, it all adds up. So that's the way individual activism does work. And also being vocal about it, which is what I'm trying to do in terms of some of my writing, is an important, I think, contribution. So basically bringing other people's attention to different aspects of it. I mean, I'm trying to do that through some of my poetry, which brings different perspectives on it. And so other people can be doing other forms of activism. And even just, you know, doing your own bit to recycle that. I mean, one of the big issues now is the amount of plastic that we've put into the environment. We were just in Kenya with my wife to visit my son, and there they've taken note of that, and they've banned plastic bags. So you go to jail if you throw a plastic bag away into the street. So that thing does make a difference. That's what I mean about getting the right policies in place.
I know here in Austin, a couple years ago, they did away with the plastic bags in the grocery store. So, you know, we bring our reusable bags. And at first,
right,
you know,
and that makes fun.
Yeah, I love it now. I've got my bags. I'm ready to go. But it was an adjustment, but it wasn't hard.
Yeah, it's a bit of an adjustment. Everybody has to make an adjustment in terms of doing the right thing. There's a personal cost to some of it, but it's what we have to do if we don't want to, as I but in my poems end up going extinct very
yeah.
sooner rather than later. So that's part of what it's about.
Yeah. Now, I understand you've been semi-retired since 2004, but it doesn't sound like you've slowed down at all. So I'm curious, aside from writing, what are some of the other things you are passionate about?
Well, first and foremost, family. I spend a lot of time with my family and enjoy that a lot. I now have 3 grandchildren, and that's a real joy. And spending time with my 2 kids and their little families is great. And that's what partly why I went to Kenya. But also then, irrespective of that travel, we still love to travel and see new parts of the world, explore the bigger world around us. And then I have a few business involvements, primarily with environmental companies, so renewable energy project development companies, one in Canada and one in Austria, which I got involved with when we were living in Vienna way back when, and I'm still involved with them. And then also a fund that invests throughout Central and Eastern Europe and Africa that I'm on the investment committee of. Again, it's something I got involved in when we were living in Vienna and helped them get started. And they've done wonderfully well. And I became very good friends with the managing director, a managing partner, and so I've kept involved with that. So those are my main business involvements. So they don't take a lot of time, so I have time to write, but they are hopefully contribute the right way to the world. And
it's all about balance, huh?
Right, and keeps me active and challenge me intellectually and other ways. So it's good. And, of course, then other things I love doing are reading, listening to classical music, listening to music in general, exercising, going on hikes. We do a lot of that with my wife. And so it's been nice to be retired since 2004. I left the finance world in 1999, so even earlier, and then we moved to Budapest, moved back to my native country because I wanted to participate in helping to create a modern, democratic, capitalist society. And after 5 years there, I left in disgust because put out by the corruption and the lack of transparency and the difficulty of doing business. So that's when we moved to Vienna.
Oh, wow.
We were there for 5 years, which we enjoyed tremendously. And I consider it an interesting life because we moved around quite a bit with my wife. We've lived in different parts of the world and soaked up many different cultures and made friends all over the world. So it's been fun.
Absolutely, yeah. Lots of great writing material, too.
Well, I was just going to say that. It's also given me a lot of good stuff to write about. And to be able to set my novels in these different environments and having been there, actually, and lived there and knowing the streets, the corners, the restaurants, the food, the people, it's a fantastic gift that I've been given and that I try to incorporate into my work.
Yeah. Now, what is the best piece of advice you've ever received, either as it relates to writing or about life in general?
That's a difficult question to answer because, one receives a lot of advice about life and other things. A lot of it tends to be platitudes, for example, chill out and enjoy life, be happy, stuff like that. At the end of the day, I think one just has to live one's own life and follow one's own instincts and likes and dislikes and explore the world as one wants to. On writing, I haven't received much worthwhile advice on writing. Again, so it's just doing my own thing. And what I would say, to just write a lot to an aspiring writer. I mean, just sit down and write and don't have all kinds of commissions about it. Just apply yourself and start writing. And if the first thing doesn't work out, if you find it a bit hard to put sentences together, just keep trying. Eventually it'll come together.
Yeah.
At least that's the way I see it. On advice, I don't really have an answer.
Okay. Geza, before we go, I wonder if you might share a couple of poems with us from Extinction, your most recent poetry collection.
Sure, no, I'd love to. I can read the poem that actually gives the collection the title. The poem is called Extinction. It's not the first poem. It's the first poem in the second part. It's appropriate given some of our discussion. I could also read a lighter poem, and maybe I'll, if you'd like, I can read both. They're quite short.
Okay.
But then the poem is called Extinction. I can picture the mighty mastodon, the towering, ivoried, hairy beast that ruled and roamed this primeval earth. The fierce dinosaurs of the Jurassic, those huge, cold-blooded reptilian beasts battling each other for primacy. Through the microscope of my failing mind, in the imagined black hole of creation, I see tiny single-celled organisms, the chemical precursors to all life. I ask, when humankind is no longer, who or what will conceive the strange being that destroyed Earth and all life, including itself, as if it had been preordained?
That's beautiful and haunting.
A bit haunting and a bit heavy as
Yeah, I love that.
So would you like me to read a lighter one?
So yeah, let's end on a light note.
So this one is called Mosquito, and it also comes from the second section of the collection.
Okay.
So Mosquito. A wanton mosquito landed on the bare skin of my forearm, attacked my sealing flesh with glee. In a drunken stupor, it gorged through its proboscis on my blood. I swatted the little bugger with lightning fury and hate and squashed it to oblivion, unmindful of the perfection of a timeless, evolved being. Over the long, torrid summer, my mosquito's countless mates wreak their revenge on humanity.
Oh, I love that.
So that's about my encounter with a mosquito.
Yeah, I love that. And thank you for sharing it with us. Thank you so much for being here today on Inside Scoop Live. I really loved listening to all your stories and hearing about your experiences.
Thank you for having me, Sherry, and I'm delighted to have done it.
To our listeners, thank you for joining me today on Inside Scoop Live. To learn more about Geza Tetralier and his works, visit his website at gezatetralier.com. And be sure to check out our other interviews at InsideScoopLive.com.